and welcome to today's open mic call. Today's topic, Western Application Server Performance. My name is Elijah Robertson, and today's call will allow you to speak with our panel of experts available to us on today's call. You'll be able to speak with them about your Western Application Server performance questions. You may also access the presentation by going to neibm.com site and typing the tech doc number 701-3466 in the search box found at the very top right of the page. Before we start, we'll give you a technical overview of Western Application Server performance. But first, I would like to introduce our panel of experts. First, we have Stacy Joins.
Hi, this is Stacy Joins. I'm a distinguished engineer with IBM and leading the performance consulting practice for WebSphere.
Stan Cox.
Hey, I work in WebSphere performance and specifically look at multi-core scalability, 64-bit performance, and virtualization.
We also have Chris Blythe.
Hello, everyone. I'm a peer to Stan on the WebSphere performance team and focus a lot on general profiling and server improvements to hopefully improve our performance along the way.
Also, James Fox.
I'm currently the team lead for the Level 2 support organization for WebSphere for the FTK team, supporting mostly the performance hangs, crashes, CPU and memory type issues that customers encounter.
Also, Slava Bakalava.
I'm on the WebSphere Level 2 team. We deal a lot with security issues and WebSphere configuration issues. Prior to that, I used to work on the WebSphere performance team, so I have a little bit experience in both security and performance.
And finally, we have Sarah Dugrali.
So, hi, it's Sarah Dugrali. I am the performance lead. Current focus is the design architecture of the security runtime.
Before we get to our question and answers, we'd like to begin with a technical overview from Sarah.
Oh, hi. Performance is a key quality of service for any enterprise application. Even though we build cool applications with rich functionality, if they cannot perform, they will not be of any value to the business. As more and more applications are being deployed on WebSphere application server, the key question is how to make sure these applications perform the best in production. The performance of any application depends on many factors, including the architecture of the application, performance of the middleware this application is deployed on, and also how well all the components in the topology interact with each other. In today's open mic session, our focus is on the middleware performance. From the WebSphere development team, we have been improving the middleware performance for each release. For example, in WebSphere 6.1, we have improved the Java 1.5 performance, like introduced new memory allocation and garbage collection schemes, improved web container performance through AIO, asynchronous input-output, and also improved the EJBs through introduction of new features like lightweight EJBs, higher performance access intent settings, and also the web services performance improvement and in-process messaging improvements, and, of course, the security performance, too. So even though we try to optimize the runtime to get the best performance out of the box, it is not possible to come up with the default settings that are best performing for all kinds of application scenarios. This is where we need to tune the system to achieve the best performance for individual application scenarios. So today's open mic session is designed to address some best practices and tuning guidelines to improve the performance of WebSphere application server. Due to the limited time, our focus for today's session will be on WebSphere application server specific performance best practices. We may not be able to take any questions on the IBM Stack products like Portal, Tivoli products in today's session. Given that, I will give it back to Eliza.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. We'll begin our question and answer session with answering some questions that were submitted early to our panelists. So what I would like to do now is turn the call over to Stan.
Okay. Can we go ahead and flip over to the next slide, I think, that has the questions on there? Okay, great. So we'll start with question one. These are questions that were already sent in earlier, and the first one is pretty broad. How do I get started with performance in WebSphere application, and that should be server? Well, the first thing to recognize is that we have spent a lot of time here to make the out-of-the-box experience high-performant for most applications. However, the general business rule is that the first thing to do is to understand what your requirements for performance are and what the characteristics of your application is. And what this means is performance testing. We have worked with many customers that spend a good bit of time to test their application for functionality and to find any bugs or problems in the code, but do not have an infrastructure set up of any kind to do performance evaluation. So when the application goes live, they really have no idea how it may perform or where the bottlenecks may be. So the first and most important part of getting started with performance and a web application, any web application, and WebSphere application server is to actually test and understand what your expectations are, what the characteristics are, and where the problems are. And so with that, you know, small introduction, we can go to question two. How does WAS performance benefit me, or in this case, you? And I think we have Stacy Joins, who again is, works in our ISSW team and deals with this every day. So, Stacy, you want to take that one?
Absolutely. Thanks, Stan. So we do work in an interesting business when we talk about performance, and that is, what are the benefits of performance and how do we show those? Clearly, the benefit of doing performance work is that it allows us to fit onto our capacity plan or hardware in a way that we intended to do, right? So if we see applications that require significantly more hardware or resources than we anticipated, sometimes that's because we have not gone through the fundamental steps that Stan mentioned, which are doing some performance validation and testing before we deploy. It's also keeping up with the application post-deployment, making sure that additional changes, changes to the data behind the application, upgrades and so forth haven't moved us off our performance target. So really what we want to get to is a model where not only are we doing performance testing and validation before we launch, but we're maintaining that profile as throughout the life of the application by doing regular regression work on performance as we deploy changes and fixes. That's how we attack the problem within IBM, that our products go through performance regression before they're released, so that we try to maintain the performance profile of our products as they're delivered. So, Stan, with that, I'll give it back to you.
Nice. Thank you, Stacy. Good answer. And that will lead us to the next question, number three. I think, by the way, we have about eight preceded questions or questions that came in, just so everyone will know, we're counting down to or counting up to eight here. What are the most common methods of improving WAS performance? Well, first and foremost, I would say that in the performance engagements that I've been in, it is most commonly the end application code that that needs improvement. And that is, once performance testing has taken place and a customer realizes that they are not getting the performance that they desire, a quick profile of the application will generally show, for the most common cases, that it shows there is some algorithmic problems or locking problems in the end user application code. Some ways that we use to profile WAS, there are a number of tools available for Java profiling. In WebSphere, one cheap and quick way is through a thread dump, and that is documented. It just basically shows where all your threads are at a given moment. That's a quick and easy way to get just a very high-level idea of where time is being spent. And then there's more significant tools that are offered through on IBM's website and whatnot. And I think some later questions will get into that, so I won't detail that. That will profile the app in more detail, looking at where time is being spent and looking at where garbage collection pauses and so forth like that. Some of the later questions will dig into this more in terms of tools. And if we have specific questions after the C questions, or the initial questions, I should say, we can address those more specific questions later. So let's go to question four.
Okay. Question number four is, how do we improve the performance of WebSphere applications through better garbage collection management? And I think this is a good question because from a support perspective, the memory management, garbage collection, type issues are probably our number one customer call type issue that we see as far as the root cause of a performance issue. And generally, as we're looking at these, there's a lot of different ways that we can improve performance, and a lot of that's going to depend on the platform and your customer's specific needs, whether they have a need for their application to have top throughput or low pause times, what the size of their application is. The key things that we see, though, are misconfigurations where I think the number one thing we'll see is where the heap size has been placed too large for the application, which can create unnecessary overhead if it's not needed. It's always best to let the JVM size itself, so start with a lower minimum heap size and then have your maximum heap size set so that the JVM can sort of size itself to avoid long compactions if you have the min and max both set the same. Another key thing is to understand the limitations of your hardware and architecture. We see quite a few issues with customers where they've just assumed that more is better and just give it as big a heap as they feel is possible. This can, of course, lead to native memory issues and other type issues down the road. So becoming intimate and understanding the verbose garbage collection data and using that is probably one of the cheapest and most effective ways to kind of get an understanding of the health of your machine, the profile of your application, and also to therefore tune the garbage collection thereafter. Once again, as Stan had mentioned before, many times what ends up happening after investigation is that we take a look at how much data is being put on and taken off the heap from an application point of view if there is a performance issue, and we realize that, you know, perhaps some optimization in the code is necessary where, for example, instead of pulling back all results from a database and filtering them on the application server, it'd be better to create a query that filters the information of the database and then pulls it back, you know, only the required information on the application server. So in summary, there's not one specific answer. It really depends on the needs of the customer, but definitely becoming familiar with the garbage collection, how to read it, and then how to use that to tune your application server's needs within the limits of its architecture. Are the best steps to improve your performance. And with that, we'll go to question number five.
Thanks, James. That was James Fox, by the way. And on question number five, when do you need to use 64-bit over 32-bit from a performance perspective? And this is an area that I work in a lot, and we have a published paper out on the IBM.com site under WebSphere that talks about this in detail, but the bottom line is this. Most applications, most general purpose applications, web applications, fit very well within a 3 gigabyte heap or so, 2 to 3 gigabyte heap. And for those applications, there's really no great benefit for moving to 64-bit. I know, like in game consoles, your Xbox or your PlayStation, you want, 64-bit is better than 32-bit, and that's true because of the resolution of the graphics and the processing of highly mathematical, floating point data at a very fast rate. But in general purpose applications, there's not a significant benefit for 64-bit unless your application can use a larger heap, something bigger than 2 or 3 gigabyte, to do things like cache database data or use the memory in another way that reduces the amount of processing. And if you are able to do that, then of course 64-bit can provide a dramatic performance gain. For applications that don't leverage that extra heap in such a way, there is actually a downside to 64-bit in that all of the Java references in your code and in WebSphere code as well are now 8 bytes instead of 4 bytes. So you actually will see a memory footprint growth due to the fact that your pointers are larger. We have some technology coming up that's gonna help that a whole lot. But in general, the rule of thumb is use 64-bit if you need a large heap and can leverage a large heap. Otherwise, there's no real strong pull toward it. So you should, you know, stay with 32-bit. Works fine and runs on our 64-bit OSs. It's supported across all of the 64-bit OSs. That is, 32-bit WebSphere is supported on all of our 64-bit platforms in WAS 6.1. So that is that for that one. Let's move on to question 6 now.
Yeah, just sorry. Question 6 is, what is lightweight local mode for entity beans, and when can we use that to improve the application performance? Well, entity beans are perceived to be like heavyweight, and we have specifically introduced this lightweight local mode in the 6.1 WebSphere version to improve the performance. What is a lightweight local mode? It is a special operational mode based on the EJB3O POJO model. Where the overhead is actually coming from in the entity beans is mainly the pre-invoke and post-invoke instruction usage. And using this local mode, we can cut down at least around 30-40% of the pre-invoke and post-invoke instruction usage. It is mainly used in the session facade pattern, like the entity bean local home and local business methods are called, you know, from within methods of a stateless session bean or a stateful session bean. This can be used. Why we reduce this instructions? Because the session bean methods provide the security control and transaction demarcation for the entity beans accessed by the session beans. But there are some preconditions to use this to get this performance benefit. The bean implements an EJB local interface, and no security authorization is defined on the entity beans, so we should not define any of them. The classes of the calling bean and the called entity beans were loaded by the same JVM, then we can actually take advantage of this. And how do we apply this mode to an entity bean? There are two techniques that we can use to use this local mode. One is the EJB environment variable technique. You know, select the EJB deployment descriptor of the entity bean you want to, you know, work with, and then create an EJB environment variable with the name like com IBM WebSphere EJB container lightweight local, and then, you know, select the variable as Boolean, and then just, you know, set the variable value to true. There is another way you can use the marker interface technique. You can code your bean implementation class to implement the interface that's available in 6.1, that is com IBM WebSphere EJB container lightweight local. You can get more information from the API documentation on this interface, and also you can get this further information in the Info Center of WebSphere 6.1.
Thanks, Aria. And then we'll move on to question 7.
Okay, question 7 is again the area that I have been working for a few releases. Our focus from the WebSphere development perspective is to improve the security performance in WebSphere. Because for adapting security, performance overhead is one of the inhibitors, and we have been working to remove that. And in fact, we are quite successful in that, and the performance aspects of security are no longer the major cause for not using the security in WebSphere application server. This is a very vast subject as a security, so because we don't have that much time here, so I will focus on four different areas of security that are most important. One is the J2EE role-based security, Java 2 security, SSL security, and the web services. Briefly talking about each. We have introduced some new security tuning parameters in 6109 and beyond to improve the J2EE role-based security. We call it as the caller list tuning. What happens is when you enable J2EE security, security attribute propagation is enabled by default. Because when we enable SAP, WebSphere tracks the server requests passed through as well as, you know, identity information. Because of this caller security identity information tracking is expensive, there are two tuning parameters that are available. We call them as the caller list tuning. If your application is not a security chained delegation application, then you can use these, like disable the propagation caller list, and you can completely avoid the extra cost. Almost, you can completely eliminate the SAP overhead. That's how you improve the J2EE security performance. For the Java 2 security performance, we have made significant improvements in 6109 again and beyond. The major improvements came from the class loading behavior, but also we have introduced a new read-only subject cache. There are two new custom tuning properties to set this read-only subject cache. When you create the subject, and if you're not modifying the subject, you can take advantage of this subject cache. You can set the cache size equal to the number of unique users that you're expecting in your environment. Now, moving on to SSL, of course, SSL, we can improve the performance mainly with two crucial tuning things. One is the major cost of SSL is coming from the handshakes. So we can reduce the handshakes through SSL affinity. That is very crucial to performance. And also we can increase the long-lived connections through keep alive MAX request settings. Moving on to the general tuning for security. There is a security cache timeout value, which is 10 minutes by default. If you increase that, because once you authenticate and put your subject in the cache, it will stay there for before it is invalidated, the timeout value is 10 minutes. If you increase this substantially, you will avoid re-authentications, and that will improve your security performance. Now, coming to some web services performance recommendations, for the best performance of the web services security, avoid using the WSecurity message level signature and encryption when messaging is between point to point. You can achieve the same security using the HTTPS for signature and encryption, along with the WSecurity security token security tokens. And if you have to, you have to use the full message signatures and encryption. Use data power instead to offload the work, and then use the HTTPS connection from the data power to the WebSphere. Given that, we have much more than this, but I would like to get to the next question. Question 8, please.
So we'll hand it over to Chris for question 8, which is, what tools do you typically use for monitoring WebSphere performance? And after this question, we will jump into, as Stacy mentioned, live questions and welcome some more detailed and deep questions that maybe can stump one of us. That would be great.
So hello, everyone. So there are a variety of tools out there for sort of monitoring WebSphere performance and then also debugging some of the performance issues that you run into. And, some tools are better suited for one and some tools are better suited for the other. And, you know, if we're coming at it from the perspective of just simple monitoring, you know, some of the OS tools are the best, like VMStats or PerfMind, to actually get a sense of what's happening on your server. You know, that's sort of the basics. And then you start stepping into some of the server tools as well. And one that we typically advertise for simple monitoring purposes and actually monitoring sort of, you know, your thread pools, your connection pools, and a lot of other, you know, sort of resources within the server is the performance monitoring infrastructure and the typically performance viewer that's actually built into WebSphere in the admin console. Now, there are some other tools that exploit this. I know Tivoli ITCAM takes advantage of the PMI statistics that we generate, but then there are also other tools like Wiley Interscope and whatever else. And those are, like I said before, really good tools for just getting a sense of what your server's doing from a high-level perspective and monitoring some of these tunable things. And by the way, our team has done a lot of work to try and make sure that the default tuning parameters for, you know, the thread pools, the connection pools, so on and so forth, are set at fairly good out-of-the-box settings for any type of application. You know, there are certain situations where a tweak needs to be made here and there, but, you know, we try to do the best that we can, and we generally do a pretty good job. Now, there are other situations where you actually need to start looking into diagnosing performance problems. And, you know, some of the first places to start there are looking at the verbose GC. So you can actually enable verbose GC on the within the JVM to spit out all the JVM diagnostic information. And there are tools out there for graphing that, so you can, you know, look at, you know, how much heat do you have after a collection, before the collection, what are your pause times, are you running into fragmentation, those sorts of issues. And then, you know, there's also the classic kill minus three or generating a Java thread dump. We tend to call that within the performance team a poor man's profiler, because what you can do is while your server's running or executing a workload, you can kick this off, take a look at the thread stacks associated with all the threads on the server, and get a sense of, you know, what the application is doing by looking at that. And associated with those two, there are tools out there for download on the IBM support sites. And these tools are built into what's called the IBM Support Assistant, or ISA. And there are tools in there for graphing or taking a look at your thread dumps. And I believe there's one for looking at the verbose GC output. And there's also one for diagnosing memory leaks as well, called Heap Analyzer. So just want to throw out a plug for those while we get a chance. Then I believe Stan and Stacy alluded to the performance profilers. Now these are things that we don't advise, you know, putting in a production environment. This is more when you're actually doing some sort of performance validation test in a test or a QA environment, where you can actually load the profilers up and get a really, you know, in-depth sense of, you know, what code you're executing. Are you running into locking issues in the JVM? And there are a whole set of tools out there for that. I know there's JProbe. There's also, if anyone's ever heard of it, Performance Inspector, which is something that is very similar to what we use within our team. So other than that, did anyone have anything to add before we move on to questions submitted?
This is Stacy. I think we the only thing that we might want to cover just before we go to some of the great questions we're getting online is, in general, we've talked a lot about performance and performance problem determination with the product. I think one of the things to keep in mind, there are a lot of parameters in the application server, but one of the things to remember is that we've done quite a bit of work to try to make the out-of-the-box experience very good. And so other than some JVM heap size settings, most of our customers run pretty comfortably with the threading and the default parameters that we have around the various thread pools and so forth. So we do encourage folks to get familiar with those parameters and to learn how to do problem determination and testing around those, but we've seen folks take various bits of tuning advice and apply it uniformly. We really want to get to a point where we're making changes based on very prescriptive reasons. So we've done problem determination. We've seen where there is a problem and have made an adjustment based on that rather than trying to apply universal tuning advice. And again, our experience is most customers run fairly well with the, or quite well with the default parameters in most cases, with the exception of maybe adjusting their heap size. So that was the only thing I had to add. And
we're going to turn the call over to Roki, and he'll open our lines for questions.
We do have a couple questions in the queue. Our first question will come from George Trawick with Protective Life.
Hi, thank you. I have an application that runs well in a Windows environment, and I'm in the process right now of porting it over to Linux in a ZVM environment on the mainframe. And the application, there's a particular process in the application that takes about 3 seconds in a Windows environment, and it takes about 20 seconds in the Z Linux environment. And this is just with me and just one user exercising the application. It seems to be the application pulls a lot of data from the database, and that seems to be the same on both platforms. What I'm seeing the response time issue in is the it's kind of like inflating the database data into the Java objects. What would you recommend in terms of either profiling or some method to determine what exactly is going on there? The database server is on a different platform. It's on an AIX RISC 6000. The application interfaces with an MQ server that's a Windows-based machine. So there's some data translation going. We're doing UTF-8, in the Z Linux world,
right.
And of course we're ASCII in the Windows world.
I think this is James, and in a case like this where we see an issue where we have a customer says it takes so many seconds here and it's different on this platform, the first thing that we like to do is go through, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the performance must-gathers that support asks for, but we'd want to get the performance must-gather on Windows and then the performance must-gather on Linux, and kind of just, and the reason for that is I know we've got an area that you're focused on, but that gives us a really good holistic view of the machine, and especially working on Z Linux or any partitioned environment, we want to make sure that we're not going to be able to do an apples-to-apples comparison, but we want to make sure that there's no underlying resource constraint that might be causing this issue. Once that's done, we're going to take a look at the area that's bottlenecking, such as if it's in pulling back from a database or whatever it may do, and we're going to want to implement trace at that point. And then there are some tools out there. There's a trace gap analyzer tool that's available out on DeveloperWorks that can go through and kind of compare them and then look for gaps in the application trace to see if there's like a longer set of pauses, and we'll just kind of do a comparison at that point to further narrow it down. So in something like that, the exercise is going to be to start at a very broad level just to make sure that we don't drill down one path and then miss something that was well under that, and then just sort of refine our search over and over. Now, one thing to set the expectation, this is going to be an iterative process.
Right.
Just because it's always just in our experience, as opposed to starting with the fine detail and then possibly having to move backwards, it always seems to work out better for us to start at that level. So I would definitely recommend, if you don't have support engaged already, that we start with the must gathers, interpreting those and taking a look at it at a holistic view, and then drilling down once we isolate the component with trace and comparing the different trace entry and exit times.
Thank you.
I know there was a couple of people that were posting questions in the group chat, and I just wanted to answer a couple of those before we moved on. And I know we've got some other ones that will just take a second. One being the kill minus 3 creates a thread dump. What's the signal get a heap dump? That's going to differ per platform. But in each case, there's going to be, for Solaris and HP, depending on the version that you're on, there are command line arguments that you can use that will enable heap dumps on kill minus 3. And then with the IBM JVMs, there are environment entries that can be used to enable them. So it's still going to be a kill minus 3. It's just whether or not you have the heap dump function enabled. And then the other question regarding how to monitor native memory usage, the best thing to do there is to use the OS tools. Once again, that's going to be OS-dependent, like SVMon or Process Explorer, depending on what platform you're on.
You have a question from Joe Kortmar with Wachovia.
Yeah, hey, this is Joe Kortmar. Thanks a lot for having this session. The question I have is around, the the min-max thread counts versus the heap allocations, and when you run into applications that can slow down during certain time periods because of back-end systems, so the response time goes from sub-second to 3 seconds, which when that happens, it consumes all the threads and it consumes more of the heap. But when it's running fast, it can actually handle more work with different heap configuration parameters, but sometimes you're limited because the maximum thread count. If you raise the maximum thread count too much, you could cause out of memories or you could cause application issues. So there's no dynamic capabilities of the, you know, maximum thread count based on how much resources the JVM heap is actually using. Is there any work going on in that area to try to help better utilize this capacity when the capacity is there under slowdown conditions?
Well, we have Chris, I think, who works a good bit with our web container. Certainly the thread pool in the web container is the area that this tuning would take place in. And with that, Chris, you want to kind of take through the guide on that?
Sure thing. So you're probably, you know, familiar with the admin panels and notice there is a min and a max setting. And typically what we do is, as the application scales up, we'll create up to the max, but we never really, you know, start with the full max. Like if you were to set your min and max to the same thing, say 50, realistically when you start your server out, it's going to start at 1 or 2, and then it's going to work its way up until it gets to that min. And so on and so forth. Well, there's also a reclaim setting on the thread pool, and that's based on, I believe, either milliseconds or seconds. So what you can have is set your min at a lower level and your max at a higher level, and, you know, set up that reclaim interval to a point where, you know, if a thread is sitting idle for, say, 500 seconds or something like that, then it will reclaim it and pull it back down to the minimum thread pool level.
Right, but when you do that, if you set the min too low, it can't handle burst traffic. It ends up allocating too many threads, and it actually costs WebSphere more time to allocate all those new threads and get the JVM ready to accept the work. That sometimes there's cases where you want to set your min and max almost close to equal to handle that burst traffic so that they're available.
And there's benefits, of course, to setting your min and max the same in the fact that you're not going to be creating and destroying threads, and having those threads sit idle is not going to, it's going to take up memory, but it's not going to, you know, it's not going to take up resources per se.
Right.
So depending on your environment, if you have, you want to avoid a high amount of thread creation and destruction, then, yeah, you would want to, and that which could eventually lead to, you know, creating a lot of pinned objects on the heap and then impact your heap work and all that. There's a good amount, you know, it's a good idea. It's really going to depend on your application's profile, though, what's going to suit you best. I mean, the one thing I will say is you definitely want to avoid the allow growable option.
Yes.
That'll just turn a deadlock or a hang into a running your system out of resources and mask the real problem. But I think the best answer for you would be to literally keep your, you know, understand what your max is, keep your min and max, you know, the same if you have the sudden burst and you want to avoid that oftentimes you'll see really high web container thread numbers if you want to avoid that constant creation and destruction, which can lead to other native memory issues as well. Kind of understand if it's going to peak above this, maybe it's time to scale to multiple processes, you know.
Well, the allow growable would be fine if it had the CPU. I mean, it has CPU, and if the response times are going slow, and I still have available heat based on the life of the objects, they're now longer, so I'm consuming more heat. The allow growable would be fine in a situation to get those threads in and get them going.
Well, there's a lot of danger with that option, though, because let's say there is a hang or the back-end service goes down, all incoming requests are going to spawn new threads, and what we see is then native memory issues where you have 400-something web container threads, you know. So it's got its function if you can really trust the traffic coming in, but there is a lot of inherent danger to that.
Because going too slow, it generates too much backlog. And then WebSphere spends time trying to recover from the backlog, then, you know, take on the current traffic, and you end up, if it lasts too long, if those timeout periods last too long, the only way to recover is to reboot web servers.
Right.
And a lot of people in the whole industry I hear saying, well, yeah, we got to recycle our web servers to stop all that traffic to get everything going again.
Right. Absolutely. So, I'm sorry, this is Stacy. What version of application server are you using?
Everything from 6.0 on up.
Okay.
And I'm even testing with 7 beta.
Okay.
So, go ahead, Stacy. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say a couple of things. First, there's a larger problem in dealing with systems, back-end systems that tend to slow down, right? The other thought is there a way that we can structure the application so that interactions with systems that aren't as responsive as we'd like them to be or are outside of our control, which is, you know, an inherent problem in middleware, right, that we're not always in control of everything we attach to. Is there something that we could do to make that interaction a little more predictable? And would that be through thinking about async services, something, you know, using one of our ESB technologies, right, to potentially attach to this device or to this backend system, provide, you know, more of a message and asynchronous interaction to it than a synchronous thread wait, right? That's not always possible, but if there is a way that we can better control that interaction, that overall application design around that point can be very beneficial, right? The other thought is there's additional features in 6, 6.1, and continuing on into 7 that basically we have a transport layer now that is, you know, a little bit better at absorbing burst traffic than the ones in the pre-6 versions. So, you know, we get the queuing of those requests in a layer outside the web container. Now, if the web container can recover and start processing, and we can control the number of threads that are engaged with that so that we're not overwhelming resources in the mid-tier, we're not, you know, another problem with the burst of threads growing suddenly is that it may cause other resources like our JDBC connection pools and other things to need to grow very quickly on the back end, so we have this ripple effect of that burst. If we can control the container size and queue more to the front end than in the mid-tier, we may see a slight increase in response times, but the general experience in the mid-tier tends to be better if we can control that container growth. So, you know, sadly, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution here, but there are several different configurations and adjustments and proportions that we can consider that may help us manage the problem, right? Because we're not going to solve the outage problem, but how do we manage to it, right?
Right, and how do we recover from it at a high-volume, high-traffic situation? You're trying to start the JVMs up and then open up the web servers and you get flooded.
Right. And, you know, we've done some work with other customers that talk about, well, we just have to manage the number of connections that we allow to come into us in some regards, right? And I think, you know, we might want to talk with you more in more detail about the transport settings, what we might be able to do there by controlling the number of connections that we allow in that layer and how that feeds into the mid-tier. You know, basically the problem we run into is that the hardware is sized or is capable of supporting n number of connections, and we have these times where we burst to, you know, some multiplier of that, right? So we know we can't handle that. So how do we absorb keeping that overwhelming flood from arriving and let the response time at a peak handle that backlog as quickly as we can?
Okay.
So, yeah, and I was just going to mention this is a difficult question that you're asking. I mean, you're describing a very dynamic workload, one that changes over time with you know, the back end resources being a clear problem. Let me say that that's a challenge for any, and that's for any kind of application server and application technology. So I think we can handle it. Maybe we could follow up in more detail after the call, or you know, if you could send one of us an email, we could follow up with more detail there. We want to move on to the next question.
We'll now hear from John Langer with IBM.
Hi, it's John Langer. Is it appropriate to ask a question about WebSphere version 7?
Well, I guess it has been announced, so we're past the stage of having to pretend that we may or may not be working on it. But it is preliminary. Any answer would be a preliminary answer and subject to change, of course.
Okay, so my question is relative to WebSphere version 7 on ZOS. Would there be any benefit from exploiting either the large page support or the compressed references support?
Well, I will hand over to someone else for, I believe the answer is yes and then no. For the compressed references, I'm actually going to have to defer on that one to find out exactly what our strategy was. Of course, Z, you know, with the 31-bit versus 64-bit, has unique challenges when it comes to compressed references. The good news is that in all of our performance testing from day one, we have never ever measured nearly as a significant of a hit for 64-bit on Z in terms of the performance degradation due to larger pointers. And therefore, as Z moves to 64-bit, we are going to, unanimously recommend going to a WebSphere 64-bit install. The 31-bit limitations are generally too small for most applications, and therefore we would move on to 64-bit. And I will have to, if I could get your name or I could follow up with you later, I can tell you more about our strategy for compressed references on 64 on ZOS specifically.
Okay, that'd be great.
Okay, we'll go to the next question.
Certainly, we now hear from Srinivas Kuncham with Paisley.
Hi, I have a question. I'm trying to use -x dump option with Solaris environment, with VAS 6.1, and it doesn't seem to be working.
I believe the X dump is an IBM JDK option. What are you exactly trying to do on 6.1? Trying to get a heap dump or trying to get a...
No, I was first trying to get the X dump option to work. I wanted to get a heap dump, actually, yeah.
Okay, and on 6.1 right now on the Solaris JDK, there is no heap dump ability. I should say it's there, but you can't trigger it at this point. You have to go back and use like the, I believe it's the JMAP function, which only works on heaps that are really smaller than 500 meg. We're expecting a fix from Sun on this. I mean, they have the code in there to create a heap dump on the 1.5 JDK on Solaris, but it just... unfortunately, does not work. So we're still awaiting a fix for that from Sun. There are profiling ways to get heap dumps, but they're very intrusive. Like I said, such as using, I believe JMAP is one way to do it. But it's sketchy at best at this point. So until we get that fix from the Sun team, we're unfortunately limited on how we can create heap dumps on 1.5 for Sun.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move over to Melissa Hubbard with HiMark.
Hi. We're in the process of moving our WebSphere environment to Linux on VVM, and our OS team is planning to lay down 64-bit Linux, but we want to stay with the 31-bit WebSphere. And I've read some documentation about like a 2 gigabyte memory limit for processes on Linux, and I wondered if that limitation is based on the operating system or if it's based on the WebSphere installation. And basically, I was wondering if we will still have that 2 gigabyte limitation when we go to our 64-bit ZVM environment.
That's a physical limitation, and it's going to vary by platform. With a 32-bit process, you have technically a 4 gig addressable space, and depending on the platform that you're on, the kernel could take 1 to 2 gig of that, and there are some kernel changes you can do. And then what you have with your, when you set your heap limit, that let's say you're on a, on like Linux, let's say it's got a 2 gig kernel, and then that leaves you with a 2 gig addressable space for the actual application itself. I believe on Z-Linux with 31-bit, that's actually even smaller. It's, but, you know, for practice sake here, let's say that we have that. You also have to consider your, if you set your heap size, that's going to reserve a certain section of that 2 gig sandbox that we're talking about. And if you set that too high, you're going to starve it for the native memory consumption that the machine might have, which is in the, you know, for, it's going to vary depending on the number of threads, the amount of JNI code, you know, if you use type 2 versus type 4 JDBC drivers, et cetera. So if you have a need on to have, I wouldn't recommend a 2 gig heap on Z Linux. If it's possible, that might be a little bit higher than what the 31-bit can have. Generally, what we see as a max for that is about 1.5 gig. If you have a need to go higher than that, then you need to take a look at whether or not we need to look at 64, or if you need to keep with 31-bit but then scale to multiple JVMs.
Okay.
A lot of this is also covered in the JVM Diagnostics Guide, which is available online. It has a wealth of information about the addressable space, memory management, garbage collection, all that other stuff.
But and to add to that, James, very quickly, so yes, 31-bit will address 2 gigabytes of virtual memory. And so your Java heap would be limited to under 2 gig. Obviously, the kernel's got to have some space. But I think you asked, once you move to 64-bit on Z, and ZVM, the Linux running on that ZVM, would you still have that limitation? And the answer is no. At that point, you could allocate heaps, up to far beyond what physical memory you actually have in the box. So you wouldn't be limited anymore.
But that 32-bit is based on the WebSphere installation, or
okay, no.
Okay,
so WebSphere on Z would have a 31-bit. Install if you're on a 31-bit Z, right? And on a 64-bit Z, you would have a 64-bit install. And it's not a limitation of WebSphere. All processes on 31-bit are limited to a 2 gigabyte address space. That's the name of the game. And on 64-bit, that limit is something up in exabytes. So it's far
terrible,
beyond what anybody could have physical memory now. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we were planning to install 31-bit on a 64-bit OS, though.
Right.
I don't know.
And
if
that would
that...
be as a 31-bit executable, you would fall under all the restrictions of a 31-bit architecture. So you wouldn't be able to take advantage of the 64-bit architecture if you're running a 31-bit executable.
Okay. I've seen a table yesterday. I was in one of the webcasts for Bose GC, and they had said if you're using the huge mem kernel,
mm-hmm.
that you could get up to 3 gigs. So that's where I kind of got the idea that maybe it's based on OS.
Yeah, it is. And there's different, and that goes back to what I was saying as far as there are different platforms have different kernel options or different memory management options to increase that addressable space for 32 or 31-bit applications. It's like I said, pardon me, it might not be the best thing to do, though. Depending on your application's needs, it might be better to go to 64-bit or to scale to multiple 31-bit or 32-bit for performance reasons, though.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're going to do is we're going to go over to Sarah for a summary of today's call.
Thank you. Thanks for attending today's open mic session on WebSphere Application Server Performance. This question and answer session covered many useful tips and the best practices for the WebSphere Application Server. Like some of the topics that we covered are like the general tips on WebSphere middleware performance, how to do the performance load testing, and 64-bit versus 32-bit performance considerations, security performance best practices, some of the JV and web application performance, JVM performance, and Z-Linux issues. For further questions and best practices, please stay tuned to the upcoming open mic sessions. Or also, you can always call the IBM support. And if you have a major issue, our IBM ISSW services especially skin, that help you definitely. And also, we have a wealth of the performance, WebSphere performance labs and sessions in the upcoming IBM Impact coming in April 6th to 9th next year in Venetian, Las Vegas. That will be a very good venue to interact with all the IBM specialists and architects and performance analysts to get new your questions answered and get all your other issues resolved there too. And now back to Eliza.
All right, thanks, Ron, for that summary. And at this time, we'd like to conclude the presentation. We hope that we were very helpful with answering your questions today. We hope that this call has been vital to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future open mics, which will be announced on the Webster Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you to our panel for speaking with us today.